I'll tell you, I am fired up today because how about them Bears?
Dan Wiederer
from the Chicago Tribune again.
Bears beat reporter and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Your boy Dan Wiederer was on the radio last week with Speaks. Mm-hmm.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
Talked in London about Caleb being bossy.
He bossy, but in a not like mean way, but like his own way. So take that as you want.
I mean, does it please you? I mean, is it fondue?
Doesn't please me, but it's good to see.
We got to circle the wagons. We got to do a really good job of staying tight. It's important that we do that.
How do you measure the buy-in of the group?
The what?
The buy-in.
Dan Wiederer.
His name is Dan Wiederer. Wiederer time.
Bears.
The Take the North pod. Dan Wiederer talks football with you.
We love when we get the opportunity to talk with Dan Wiederer, and we were hoping that at this point in the season, the conversations would be much happier than what the conversations have been about your Chicago Bears. It's Spiegel and Holmes show. We are at Stadium Swim at Circa, which is amazing, and Dan Wiederer is getting ready to cover a Bears-Patriots game at Soldier Field. Weeds, thanks for joining us. I wanted to start with the piece that you wrote. And the run game component of trying to get DeAndre Swift more involved with what the Bears want to do, and looking at that game that New England played against Jacksonville as an example. For people who didn't watch that game, what was the lesson that was learned on what to do against New England and what New England can do against the Bears defense?
This is one of those rare occasions where the thing that you're trying to get fixed comes with a remedy from the opponent you're playing. And so when the Bears go into this week trying to reestablish the run and reestablish a commitment to the run, whether it works really well at first or it doesn't work at all at first, staying committed to it can be a problem for some offensive coordinators. And so that's something that's on the top of their priority list. To their the plus side of things, they get a New England defense that's been really bad against the run, that's missing several key guys up the middle, on the front line, the second level, and the back end. And so you should have an opportunity here to get yourself going. To the specific example of the game in London, I was fortunate enough to be able to watch that entire game live because it was the Bears bye week, and it was that 8:30 a.m. game that Sunday after the Bears returned from London, and the Jaguars got behind. They were behind 10 to nothing, and yet they stayed wedded to the running game, and they kept feeding Tank Bigsby. And once they got things established and they got that flow going and that balance established, they leaned into it. And at one point in that game, they ran the ball on 16 consecutive offensive plays. They walked out of London with a 32-16 win a week after getting their teeth kicked in by the Bears. And so that should tell you a lot about the opportunity that's there for the Bears and maybe about some of the nudging and urging they need to do to stay wedded to the running game, even if it doesn't click right away.
How convinced are you that they will? Because we have seen this, but even in last week's game, and I know that the score looked a little backwards, but at 24-19, yeah, it's still a two-possession game, and they got away from the run. So how concerned are you that they won't be able to stay with the run in what looks like an opportunity for them to do that?
I'm always concerned because it's a show me league. And so you can talk about things Monday through Saturday until you put it on the field. It doesn't really mean much. And so some of that revolves around being successful enough that you're not in third and longs all the time, that you can run the ball on third down every once in a while, that you can run it on second and medium sometimes to keep things going. And look, like there's an opportunity here to take a breath and get your footing and get yourself steady again. Now, the news today is a little bit worrisome. You're going to be without both of your starting offensive tackles, Braxton Jones, Darnell Wright, both still out with knee injuries. That causes a reshuffle on the offensive line. I have my hunch of what I would do if I was put in that position. Matt Eberflus was very, very vague on what he would do. And they're going to keep that shroud of secrecy through the weekend. And we'll see how they line up on Sunday. But that's a factor on your ability to do what you want to do, because you have to be able to trust the guys in front of you to open up some of those holes.
This segment with Dan Wiederer is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS. You tweeted something fascinating about accountability. I want to get to that in a little bit. But let's get to what you just said. What would you do with available healthy bodies as a shuffle for the offensive line? And what do you suspect is another option that Matt Eberflus could do, if not this one?
So you would assume that the left side of the line through Coleman Shelton is set. You've got Larry Borum, Tevin Jenkins, Coleman Shelton. And now you've got options. Do you want to keep Matt Pryor at right guard and, you know, lean into the continuity you've had there since he's come in and played pretty well? That would leave you probably playing Jake Curran at right tackle. That doesn't make me feel really good about it. You could move Pryor outside the tackle and try to get Ryan Bates in for his first action as a Bear this weekend. He is active and ready to go. But Ryan Bates hasn't played football really in 3 months. And so he probably is going to need to be on a snap count. If you do that, that means you're probably using Nate Davis and or Doug Kramer to be the guy that rotates in at that guard position. So you can understand why they're probably scratching their head, pulling their hair out a little bit at House Hall, trying to figure out what the combination looks like that will be best for them. It is a little bit of a Rubik's Cube that they've got to put together this week, given the attrition up front. Hopefully they do it in a way that creates some form of comfort for Caleb Williams, because he really, really, really could benefit from a game where he's back there, can see it, can operate, and doesn't have to have that anxiety that was clearly present throughout most of the second half in Arizona.
When you're watching this and your breakdowns, and we don't want to try to assess blame, but trying to figure out why things have gone the way that they've gone, when you look at the breakdown on the offense, how much of this do you feel like was inevitable, like it's just rookie quarterback stuff? And how much of this is what they've done and maybe not put Caleb in the best situation?
There's no question that the rookie quarterback piece of the pie is a piece of the pie here. And look, like, everyone should have been expecting that there wasn't going to be this linear climb to where Caleb's ultimately going to go, that it was going to have dips, it was going to have spikes, and you were going to have to kind of understand what each week's matchup presents to you. Mark Grody and I talked about this on Take the North this week, where not every week's test is the same. You know, there's different degrees of difficulty in each week. And so sometimes you play poorly because the test was harder, and sometimes you play well because the test was easier. And so ultimately you have to sort through all that. To the larger question, Lawrence, I think the troubling thing as you go through the reviews of these games is we're to the second half of the season right now, and they don't have any identity. We don't know who they are. We don't know who they want to be. We can't figure out why they can't put together a consistent effort that pushes you in a direction where you go, oh, that's what the Bears offense is supposed to look like. Look no further than the two games they played before the bye week, where you thought, like, hey, that's what Chicago Bears offense is supposed to look like. And then you get the two games afterward and they can't get anything going, and they're doing things differently, and they're struggling, and they're, you know, committing penalties and getting behind the chains with negative plays. And ultimately you've got to lean into what you do really well. And we're about to go into game 9, and we don't really know what they do best.
Dan, our guy Chris Emma was on yesterday and offered some interesting numbers on average depth of target, ADOT, right? Where, like, DJ yeah. Moore has some of the shortest average depth of target on his career. Keenan Allen at age 32 has the longest depth of target in his career. That seemed odd. I wonder if you buy that methodology as one way to gauge whether Shane Waldron knows what he's doing or not. Because I find the conversation very difficult to dial in on. And if not that, or in addition to that, what are some other ways that, like, either metrically or kind of scientifically, we as football observers, or you as a hardened beat writer, can look into this and try to figure out whether Shane is good at his job or not?
Right. And you know, that's not the be-all, end-all, but there are some things within those numbers that are illuminating, because we know, without any question, that DJ Moore and Keenan Allen are high-level NFL receivers, right? They've proven it over years and years and years and years. And when both of them are struggling and both of them are not doing the things that we've seen them do consistently throughout pretty long careers at this point, certainly longer for Keenan than for DJ, then you have to start asking the question, what are the new variables introduced? Okay, one of them is the quarterback, and we've seen some obvious disconnect between Caleb and DJ. I mean, how many throws have we seen, including one last week, where Caleb's throwing a back shoulder route and DJ's still going vertically, and they're not seeing the same things, they're not operating the same way? And then you say, okay, is that a byproduct of what the play call was? Is it a byproduct of what the system has been and is trying to be? And so, look, like, Keenan and DJ's struggles, certainly they have to take some accountability for it, but those guys have track records, you know, and when track records are suddenly kind of regressing and they don't look like they always have, you got to start asking serious questions. And so we talked in October about Shane needing to adapt, and then we talked toward the end of October about Shane's going to need to adapt several times as the season goes along. Well, guess what? This is a huge moment on Sunday. I think we'd all agree that a loss on Sunday at home to the Patriots would be far, far, far more significant than a win will be. And so this is a big moment for Shane in this offense.
Do you like any of the, like, the next-gen stat options? Or, like, and admittedly, I'm coming at this, you know, as a lifetime baseball guy with innumerable ways to try and figure out if it's plan and scheme or execution. You know what I mean? And I think football's just a much more difficult sport to ascertain responsibility.
I've had the experience the last 2 years of doing some play calling in a sixth grade and fifth grade flag football league, and I have a greater empathy now for play calling and how difficult it can be when you think something's going to work and then it doesn't, and then you're like, oh God, I wasn't expecting to be in this situation, and now on the fly, how do I adapt? How do I create moments where my best players can do the things that they do best? The Bears have to do that. The reason they stocked this offense up with talent is that so it wouldn't be so hard on a play caller, so it wouldn't be so hard on a young quarterback. You just lean in to the guys who are proven. And it's not just DJ and Keenan. DeAndre Swift has been a good back in this league. Cole Kmet has been a really good tight end in this league. You've got guys that can give you everything you need. Now you have to figure out a way week by week and really through a bigger picture lens, you know, month by month, to have them consistently unlocked. I can't believe that we took such a huge step back coming out of London with what this offense has looked like and what they are trying to be. And so again, like, this is a moment here where they're going to have to really zero in on a plan that lets guys play fast and free and maximizes the skills that we know they have. Like, there's no question on, are these guys good? We know four of those weapons that I just mentioned are really good football players in the NFL. So prove it and turn them loose.
I was there in Arizona, and I know that that's me parachuting into a beat. So the things that I may notice are things that maybe you've noticed or I might be overreacting to. So I'm curious, when you're in this locker room right now, how does it feel from your point of view?
Strained is the first word that comes to my mind. That's what I would say. I there's a frustration here that they're trying to channel in a positive direction, but aren't always succeeding at doing. This isn't my first time covering a locker room that's shaken. Unfortunately, I've got great experience in being in that environment. Some of Caleb's issues last week felt like a player and a offense pressing, right? And pressing comes from when you're really, really, really trying to do well and you don't have the answers. And then you start to press a little bit. And so that's where I feel like there's a little bit of pressing on the field. The results don't go the way you want them to. And so then you feel extra tense and anxious inside the locker room. The thing that has bothered me, Lawrence, I guess, over the last several weeks is that the belief in the leadership seems to be receding. Dangerous place to be as a football team, particularly one that has the potential to salvage this season if they play well. That's where I would lean with that question. And obviously, the next 3.5 weeks are going to tell us a lot about what this football team wants to be.
The belief in the leadership is receding. Dan, that has seemed the way for a couple of weeks now. And I, for one, can't get past it, because we've seen so many examples in team sports where that lack of belief is just, is ultimately debilitating. It's ultimately debilitating, especially in a complementary sport like football, where all seven guys on a certain play have to be working in tandem together. And there's like a shared trust that doesn't work. What is the effect of players knowing that things are bad and coaches not saying that things are bad publicly? And are they saying that things are bad privately? Because they're not publicly, and it's distressing. It's been distressing.
Yeah, well, Matt, for the first time on Sunday after the game and again on Monday, really kind of leaned into the, it's my responsibility, that, you know, I've got to be accountable for that. That was a clear change in tone from what we had been experiencing. I don't know that what is expressed publicly and privately is as important as, do you have the methodology to fix it? You know, and that's where the big picture cracks in the foundation come in, when the players don't see their leaders as having the ability to fix it. You know, I can't have my dentist over to fix my car. You know what I mean? And so like,
you could.
You'd be a little bit nervous, right? When he's got the car up and you're like, oh, I don't know if he's going to be able to pull that off. And so that's where they're in a dangerous spot, if you ask me. And again, like this, a loss on Sunday, guys, like, just stay in Las Vegas, because I don't think you're going to want to come back here if that's what you're walking into on Monday, because this town will be so upside down that there will be no recovery. It'll be a point of no return. A win will give you a temporary Sense of relief. And listen, like, win Sunday, right? You're 5-4. Now split those two home division games against the Packers and Lions. Okay, now you're 6-5. Now you're going to play a big stage game on Thanksgiving against the Lions at 6-5. Your season's there for you, you know? So that's kind of where these stairs lead. Just don't fall over the railing before you get to that moment, and try to take care of business these next few weeks and put yourself in position to do what we think this team, what we thought, I guess, this team was capable of and now have some doubt about.
Dan, can you share with the listeners the Jay Billis quote that you shared on Twitter the other day? I have it in front of me if you don't, but I thought I'd let you if you have.
Yeah, you read it and we'll talk about it.
People think accountability means blame. It doesn't mean blame. Accountability means holding yourselves to the standard that you guys deem to be important. And if it's important, you will point it out to a teammate when he is not doing it to the best of his ability, unquote. Your thoughts on that quote you shared?
Yeah, so Lawrence knows this very well. I spent 7 years of my life in an amazing athletic classroom down on Tobacco Road covering ACC basketball at Chapel Hill and Durham and Raleigh. Great place to learn about what excellence looks like and the formulas that go into building it. Jay Billis was one of my favorite people to talk to on a regular basis. Many, many conversations over the year about what leadership needs to look like and how it creates results. In this given quote that you just read, I just think there's something here about the people that are participating not being thin-skinned and defensive when called out to do their jobs better. Right? Like, that's a prerequisite for championship teams. If someone is constructively criticizing you, it's because they see room for improvement in an area that will help the team reach its ultimate goals. And when you start getting some of the defensiveness or the thin-skinned or the lack of trust in what the person above you is telling you, it can get really ugly really, really quickly. And so I think that quote is something that they should hang up at Halas Hall for the rest of the season, because they need to set a standard at Halas Hall and they need to be clear across the entire regime about what it is. And when it's not met, it has to be called out immediately and emphatically so that it can get better. Look, like, we all know that the Bears have kind of traipsed into this real dangerous area here in the last couple of weeks. The only way to get it fixed is to be accountable, to understand what the goals are, and to work every single day at getting it fixed. Hopefully Sunday's opportunity against again, this is a bad Patriots team coming to town, guys. Hopefully that gives them a chance to get on the right track and then revisit this. The dream scenario for all of us is that next week does not include a heart-to-heart team meeting of any kind.
There's been a lot of meetings, and then they try to tell you that those meetings are not a big deal because they meet all the time. If it were to go wrong for the Bears on Sunday, how would that happen?
The defense wouldn't play up to its capability, because I think if the defense does what it's supposed to do, even without Andrew Billings, you've got the returns of Montez Sweat and Kyler Gordon. You've got a rookie quarterback. You've got a Patriots team that's living in this world that we should be familiar with here in Chicago. I've talked to some folks in New England this week, and they're living in that world where intoxicating flashes from Drake May is all they want to see on game day. And if it ends up resulting in a loss, great. They're closer to the number one pick, right? They're playing
tank
that
wins.
Game.
It's they're a tank that, win, Dan.
They're playing you, that game, guys.
You probably think they need to learn how to win. It's probably what you think, buddy.
And so there's a situation here where you've got a team that, like last week, Drake May leads this you know, game-tying drive in the final 2 minutes with a ridiculous highlight to send the game into overtime. And that's all Patriots fans wanted. It doesn't matter that on his only possession of overtime, he threw a lost ceiling interception and the game was over. It was like, okay, we saw that in the big moment, he could rise up and lead us to a game-tying drive. And who cares if we lost? We're 2-7. The season's going nowhere. In some ways, that has given Drake May this, sort of normal level of patience and forgiveness that rookie quarterbacks get when they're drafted highly, because they're usually going to teams that aren't very good. Caleb doesn't have that. You know, every loss that he experiences is a four-alarm fire here in Chicago, and it creates a different level of urgency and you know, impatience and everything else that comes with that. So it's fascinating. So, like, the Bears defense should be able to win this football game on its own Sunday, to be honest with you. And then if they're able to establish the run, able to make a few big plays offensively, you should be in control of this football game. Again, you heard me say going into the Panthers week that there's no such thing as a layup in the NFL, but there are, you know, 8-foot jumpers. This is an uncontested 8-foot jumper. Knock it down. Move on to next week.
Dan, last thing. Would you like to contribute to me betting the Bears to sweep the Packers while I'm here at Circa? I proclaimed it a couple weeks ago. It doesn't look good, but having brought it up and being laughed at by everybody, I find myself definitely, I am going to bet it. And if you'd like to contribute, I'll cut you in on the proceeds. Would you like
in? I would not like in. It's against the policies that we have here. But I'm just curious what the numbers are. What kind of odds are you getting on that?
Report back after Derek Stevens.
Yeah, please do. That'd be great. I'd like to know what that looks like, because that feels like that would be like a plus 900 or something at this point. So good luck with all that, Speaks.
That is a good way to put it. Weeds, we appreciate you. Thanks so much for the perspective.
You got it, guys. Enjoy your time out there.
Tanny, mark all that for when it comes true. Okay, for when I hit it. You just mark all that.
That is Dan Weederer of our staff and of the Tribune, and does a great job covering the Bears. We'll take a little baseball respite.
I think it's time. I think it's time, and it would be good. Yeah, I have some Cubs thoughts I need to throw at you.
I know, and I saw something that is exciting, like as a baseball fan, that I wanted to share with you, which is a mentality that and a smarts showing that I hope that baseball teams that we cover look like.
Dig it.
We'll do that next. Spiegel and Holmes, we are live at Stadium Swim at Circa here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at The Score, and not just kidding. But,
Afternoons on The Score. Bananas and blow. Bananas and blow. Bananas and blow.
Stuck in my Quebec, living on bananas and blow. Oh, outstanding work by The Score people back at the shop. Robbie Triano, the tree, with Ween. And now you can join me. Every time Lawrence or anybody says Cabana, you can think of Bananas and Blow. This is their, like, Jimmy Buffett send-up. They're brilliant musicians, Lawrence. Like, every song is ironically winking at whatever the influences are. You know what I mean? Great sense of humor and really good musicians on top of it. Ween here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show on 670 The Score.
So we figured out during the break that, because I was dying, we're directly in the sun.
I was watching.
So, like, I got a cap, and that helps, and I covered up a little bit. And we figured out that part of the reason I was dying is because the heat was on.
But he's directly below the heater. Yeah. There's that little light switch over there that says heater, and it was on.
That is amazing.
So now the fan's going, and we block the sun a little bit, and I think I'll be all right for the rest of the trip.
A texter said, hey, guys, can you get a fire going for Lawrence or something? I'm worried he's not warm enough.
No, that's not what it was. It was that I have a light hoodie on, and like people who are out in the sun all day don't expose their body parts. They cover them.
Uh-huh. Well, but a texter said, oh, I thought he just saw that you were warm. I wasn't thinking it was about the hoodie, but my bad. But
I had a towel on too, but because I was in direct sunlight.
Yeah, a different texter said, Speegs, are you uncomfortable with Lawrence not wearing pants? It looked like you just having a towel on your bottom hand.
I like that. Yeah. Hell yeah.
I don't like that. What are you David Duchovny and Curb Your Enthusiasm?
You better believe it.
Oh, goodness.
No, I've had the pants on. I was just trying to make sure. I'm trying to mitigate any sort of sun damage.
It was the Larry Sanders Show, not Curb Your Enthusiasm. Duchovny sitting in his trailer in just a towel, and Gary Shandling uncomfortable as Duchovny kept doing the leg cross thing from Basic Instinct.
I fell asleep butt-ass naked last night. Took a shower when we got back from the bar, and just didn't put my clothes back on. Fell asleep.
Why not?
There you go.
Fell asleep butt-ass naked.
And the beautiful thing is the rooms that we have the nice, fresh Circa bathrobes and slippers.
Delightful. And can I say, the pillows, I don't know what's going on with those pillows.
You like them?
I adore them.
Yeah, one's going in my suitcase on the way home.
I don't know if you're
one will
to...
be the suitcase on your way home. Yeah.
I don't know if you want to say that out loud. Can you just check a pillow? Can you do that?
Sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it's like the perfect mix of the firmness and the softness. I just, but that's not why anybody called or perhaps turned on the radio station.
No.
You found baseball excitement.
Yeah, coming out of the World Series, and it actually speaks to something that we as a show noticed and talked about during the World Series, a trend that we saw, and we definitely saw it play out in Game 5. Miguel Rojas was on with Chris Rose. Check out the way that the Dodgers viewed the Yankees.
There's been a lot of stories written about the Yankees and preparing for them. Joel Sherman of the New York Post came out and wrote, what the Dodgers told their players in scouting meetings was that the Yankees were talent over fundamentals, that if you run the bases with purpose and aggression, the Yankees will self-inflict harm, and was exposed by Betts, Tommy Edman, Freddie Freeman, etc.
We face, I think, the most aggressive, the hungriest team on the San Diego Padres early in the playoffs. That was the best team in baseball at the time, the Padres, 1-26. And the way that those guys ran the bases, the way that those guys put pressure on the defense, the way that those guys took care of every detail of the game on the defensive part, the way that they pitch out of the bullpen, it kind of prepared us to everything else. Then when we got to the Yankees and we got the opportunity to prepare for them in our scouting report meeting before the series, we found their weakness. And their weakness was the way that they make out on the bases, the way that they didn't take care of the baseball and kind of like play a little bit of lazy defense. And we say, okay, we know we're good, but we're going to put pressure on them so they can make these little mistakes. And that's the reason why they bubble balls. It's because they know we're going to be running hard. We're going to be taking extra bases. We're going to be taking a little bit of an extra primary lead at first base. We know what they do when certain pitchers are on the mound. We know what they do. We know how fast they are to the play and how we're going to put pressure. We know how many errors in the infield they were when they felt the pressure and they have to rush. So we got all those videos. We know how good or how bad the catchers throw to the bases. So that's why we were prepared for them, and we knew their weakness because we knew they were a good team and they're playing hard baseball. They're swinging the bat. But the fundamentals of the game, I think we could be better, and that was the difference on that series.
That absolutely was the difference, that their superstars played more buttoned-up baseball than your superstars did.
It absolutely was the difference. And it's one thing to talk about playing clean, as we've talked about, and the need to do that. But this is next level. And I'm so glad. Who was that, Chris Rose?
Chris Rose with Miguel Rojas.
Yeah, he called back that New York Post article where Joel Sherman, because I had seen that article. And the Dodgers have, without a doubt, the biggest analytics staff in all of MLB. And this was analytics-based knowledge. And it's one thing to use that big staff to get the knowledge, but a lot of those people on that staff are in charge of how that knowledge is translated, is shared with the players. And then the coaches have to be beautifully on board with synergy about believing in what those numbers and those models can tell you and making sure the players take advantage of it. So that is the highest payrolled team, the team with infinite money, also doing that, because it's not that expensive to do that. And there is no reason why any team in baseball can't be mirroring that kind of philosophy and making sure that they have enough people to do that job and it's valued enough. And that's why like the White Sox turn toward R&D and the restructuring of that department that I brought up a couple of weeks ago, and this image of like, all right, let's finally actually use this department instead of just kind of having it there. It's why it's such a big deal, because you can't compete. You can't compete and get to anything resembling a level playing field without that. And there's lots of teams that don't have big payrolls but have that kind of synergy that can then actually compete with teams with bigger payrolls.
I love the idea of making the scouting digestible to the players and just having them understand what the mission is. Tanny reminded me, he's like, hey, wasn't that exactly what Cleveland was doing to the White Sox a couple years ago? A texter, you're right, texter, that was the Astros' plan
100%
in the playoffs.
They knew they didn't play clean. They knew they could take advantage of every opportunity.
We're going first to third. Yep. We're going second to home.
But also they knew that the White Sox analytics was not going to have them positioned properly. On top of all of it. So not only do you have the players' inefficiencies, but you have the organizational inefficiencies on top of that.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that even a team that makes it to the World Series, that wins the American League pennant, that a weakness, the Dodgers didn't just go into that game with just kind of like the pitching scouting report, like that sort of thing. They went in with a plan.
Yeah.
Like, and that's different. Like, the idea of, well, here's the scouting report, here's what the scouting report says, like, no, we're going to attack them. And here's how we're going to attack them. So to hear a baseball team acting that way, being proactive in the way that they're going to go about the game,
yeah,
is sexy as hell.
I agree. And hearing Miguel Rojas proud of it, super proud of it, knowing that it was a big part of what they did. It's so funny, man, because the Yankees were not buttoned up. And there's that way of pointing it out, and there's also the fun ways that we have. Like John Sterling saying, the Yankees run the bases like drunks. I mean, that's an absurd fun thing.
My favorite drop from all of baseball this year.
But that's Sterling being honest about what he's watched.
After he's right.
Watching 40 years of baseball, he knows they do that. And the analytics guys are like, here's what they do. So be ready to take advantage of that kind of thing. Absolutely. That's great stuff. An article in The Athletic today about what the Cubs are going to do and not going to do this offseason from Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney working together. The headline that people will take away is that they're not going after the top-end free agent. And that they're going to, you know, look towards making a trade and stuff like that. But you and I talked about the move away from scouting at the higher levels. And I just wanted to make sure that we get this in here, that still what they have and what they're amplifying is this Ivy system that they've built, which is still really, really good. And Ivy takes advantage of everything. Ivy has a component that uses scouting, has a component that uses, you know, the analytics, has a component that uses character. I mean, it's pervasive. And just let me give you this from this article. One ex-Cubs player described Ivy as light years ahead of the rudimentary platform he accessed with his next team. And the Cubs system is ever evolving. Its inputs are shaped by scouts' opinions. Ultimately, the Cubs just have to be right. Cubs assistant GM Ehsan Bakari said, we have models designed to assist in decision-making. These models take in all the useful information we have, including what's coming from scouts. Our models help guide us to making more consistent and reliable decisions, but they're not making the decisions for us. I think of the models as a GPS in our car, not a self-driving car. And so that point of clarification is how they think of it. Is there a little rationalization in there?
It kind of sounds like it.
I understand, and you're entitled to that. But I do think that using your models well with scouts' opinions is the way to do it overall.
I would only say that if what they've done, if they've been able to jump ahead of everyone else in that regard, then why have you not seen results? Because you've been looking for results for the last five seasons, and you haven't gotten them. And you had Ivy.
Yeah.
So something's wrong with either the input into Ivy or with Ivy being what gave you success early on and not evolving into the success now.
Middle of next week, let's touch back on this. I'm watching the Red Sox documentary, The Comeback.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch that on the way home.
You know, it's really good. And it can inform some of this conversation about how things used to be and how they've changed in 20 years in MLB.
Strangely enough, even with the Bears being the Bears, they're getting the number one crew for their noon game on Sunday.
What does it mean?
Does it mean anything? And what might we learn on the way out of having that crew? We'll discuss next. Spiegel and Holmes at Stadium Swim at Circa here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score. We're back with more of the Spiegel and Holmes show, live from Stadium Swim inside Circa Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us here as we peruse the menu at Stadium Swim at Circa. This place is amazing. And now that we've got the sun nice and covered up, this is delightful. Now that we turned off the heat.
Meanwhile, my arm candy has arrived.
See that.
Yeah, my wife is out there, and she's like, she's hanging out in the sun. I don't know if she thinks that it's even hot enough.
Wait, were you supposed to say that? I don't think you were supposed to say that.
She might not like it when I call her my arm candy. Maybe that was it.
I think
she didn't like that. She didn't like being objectified in that way. Possibly. She's shaking her head.
I think maybe you were telling tales out of school.
No. Everybody knows that she's here. She's an independent businesswoman. Right? She's got she's got nobody who's like, oh, why is Christine not at work today? No, she set her own schedule. Let's go.
I-E-N.
Mm-hmm. Is arm candy inherently diminishing?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Good talk.
Yeah, you don't want to. Although, I will say, if any of the five of us were called arm candy, we would probably take it as a great compliment.
That's what I'm saying.
But that's the difference between the genders. Gender roles women have been treated and objectified throughout the history of time.
To your point, whenever I have accompanied her in her previous employment status to a work party at her place, I have called myself the arm candy. That is my role.
You should allow someone else to call you that. But we did find out that Candy is one of the top 50 stripper names.
Well, you knew a lot of them.
Did you hear categories yesterday, Tanny?
You know what? I missed categories.
Oh, that must have been.
I know.
Would you like us to download it and send it to your phone?
Would
you like that? We'd be happy to do that.
We found out that Robbie's sister's name is Cinnamon. That's her given name.
Yeah.
That's her birth name.
Robbie's who?
Robbie's sister, her name is Cinnamon.
Oh. Uh-huh. Okay.
She's not a stripper.
And it's named after a horse, makes it somehow worse.
That was the weirder part.
Is that Cinnamon was his dad's favorite horse.
You're a big horse, and you must be ridden.
Right.
And I have a sister named Barbaro, too.
Yeah.
How in the hell
do you get Robbie's sister across the ocean?
And secretariat.
That's exactly right. But yes, Lawrence, you were talking about the number one broadcast group.
Yeah, and I misspoke. Not this weekend, obviously. Next weekend for Bears-Packers, they're going to get Tom Brady for that game.
Yeah.
It would really be nice if the Bears won on Sunday.
So what's interesting about that is that is being flexed. And we're big into the flex watch here. We do a lot of flex watching.
Time to have six.
And we talk about who as it was being flexed, the flexees.
It's a broadcaster crew flex, not a time flex.
Correct.
So an important distinction. Yeah, but it's a considerable change because with the number one crew, you get a better broadcast in terms of more manpower.
More cameras.
Exactly, right, yeah.
You're going to get more angles on things. Like, it's just like how they allocate stuff. Like, we have friends that have been trying to find work on those broadcasts, and those broadcasts for members of that union pay real well.
Oh, the number one crew.
Folks that want to help out.
They asked me, like, you know, I'm one of the people that are on the email threads, like, hey, do you want to pick up a union job for this game? And I'm like, I want to watch the Bears with Tom Brady on the call. Like, being on the sidelines, great and all, but I'd rather be home and consume this game.
Well, this is some fascinating behind-the-scenes stuff that, like some union workers were tipped off to this change before the news even got out of
this. Yes, yesterday. But I had some issues I was dealing with yesterday. I was not at work, and I didn't even think twice, but we could have had a little scoopage there. But, but I wouldn't betray my brothers that way.
Yeah, I saw some of the threads of friends that are also qualified union members knew about it, and seeing them go, how about that? And I was like, that's how much y'all make it? I was like, I need to join up. I will run cable. I don't give a. I will be out there for if that's what y'all making per game.
well, that's amazing. So that's it. So what's interesting about that is you get all the additional resources, and you get a lot of additional coverage, like the stuff that you had from a couple weeks ago when Nance and Romo were breaking down the matchup of the Bears and the Commanders, whatever the Fox version of that for Brady and Burkhardt, they're going to do that. And all of Brady's media appearances during the week before it and after it are going to be imbued with things he learns about the Bears and the Packers. That's what I keep thinking about it, is like the Brady lens and then the Brady megaphone could bring conversation about potential Bears dysfunction or the disparate nature of Bears-Packers to an even larger audience.
And we know that Caleb and Brady have a relationship.
And I wonder if he did that. Like, I wonder if Tom Brady was like, I want to go watch Caleb Williams up close.
That's interesting. So, like, which Caleb game am I going to get? Why don't you give me this one?
Why don't I go watch Caleb versus
and
Jordan
Love? That's a great matchup for me to talk about. If Brady's being given input, you could, of course, see him making that call. What were they flexed from? Danny, do you know?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Well, hold on. Sorry. That's a horrible radio answer. I don't know, but it wasn't necessarily on my radar at that point.
Oh, whatever.
Know? Because they announced those crews like just only like a week in advance, right? So that would have been 2 weeks out. So I don't think they had that crew locked in yet.
Oh, I see.
Maybe that would have been Amin. Maybe we could text Adam and see if that would have been him.
No, but you're right. Yeah, since it's just a crew flex,
yeah.
Which is a lovely T-shirt kind. You guys wear you wear crew
flexes? I like
flexes?
Those. You get those at Old Navy.
Yes. Those are really good. Those are really good.
True flex.
They're cheap at Old Navy as
like,
well.
Like inexpensive, not cheap.
Oh,
I like
yeah,
the Target brand, Goodfellow. That's my favorite, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so it's interesting about the lens and about the megaphone in terms of Brady to me. And I wonder what he's going to think of these coaches. We're going to get Brady's thoughts on Shane Waldron.
Or Caleb's indirect thoughts.
Yeah, sir. That's...
If they're allowed to have conversations. By the way, did you see the Brady thing about the refs, that they changed the wording on what he, as an owner of a football team, is allowed to say in terms of criticizing refs? They added the word egregiously. So that really means that he can say whatever the hell they want. It's just shades of egregiousness.
It's so weird that we're in this place with Tom Brady. Like, I wonder how long he's actually going to keep doing this. And whether, I mean, look, anyone who starts a new job, he's probably like, oh, well, let me find out the what I like, what I don't like about it.
Yeah.
But when you have an ownership stake, was it 5%?
Yeah.
In the Raiders?
He wants both, dude.
I disagree with you, but we've talked about it before. I think that once he's like, now that he's been approved and he could spend a whole offseason trying to fix the problems of the Raiders,
yeah.
I think that will be his obsession. And he will move towards the obsession.
And I disagree. I think he will.
You might be right.
I think
Speech.
He's enjoying the TV, and the ego will be fed by the TV. And if he has to choose, that's where he'll stay. And the ownership thing can somehow go into a trust or under the table and still exist whenever he's done with TV.
Yep. Okay.
Time for Olin Krutz.
Yeah, man.
We love this on Fridays at 4.
Let's talk to him about some of the issues that the Bears offensive line has and how you go about trying to work that from a play calling and game planning standpoint. We'll do that with Olin Krutz next here on The Score.